We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in you. We shall never surrender. We shall never surrender.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to episode 49 of The Art of Surrender, an MMA-focused podcast. I'm Aaron Morelli, and today I'm here with AOS founder himself, Brad Hampson. How are you going, Brad?
I'm good, mate. Thank you for the introduction. And for people listening, so Aaron and I, we've been going at this, I think we're 9 or 10 episodes into the MMA-focused ones. And so going to mix it up a little bit, take some turns in hosting it and sort of taking ownership of this episode. And with the sort of legitimizing it, we've come up with a new logo specifically for the MMA focused episodes, and we're going to drop that with this podcast. So if you're listening to this, you'll be seeing that. And a little bit of a change up, Aaron, so hope you're looking forward to it as well, and the listeners as well as yourself.
Yeah, hopefully I can be just as good as you, or even close to you.
All good, mate. We me and you have a blast anyway, regardless of if there's one listener or 1,000 listeners. We enjoy what we're doing, so I'm all about it.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. We hardly look at how many listen. We just do it for fun. So I think it's just one of those things. Yeah, we talk about it and we just happen to record it. So
yeah,
it comes out good. But what have you been up to? Obviously, you came back to Sydney and now we're locked down a few weeks after you came. So what have you been up to?
Life as usual, really, man, if I'm completely honest with you. So I've had a episode coming out with John and Matt, and that one will come out a week after this. This comes out tomorrow. It's Sunday today, the 4th of July. So it comes out on the 5th of July, fight week, UFC 264. It's what we're here for. You're going to talk more in detail about that shortly. But sort of had a chat on that podcast about the job working at Salesforce, how that's going, and people will hear that in more detail next week. But working from home. I was working from the office a bit, but we have flexible work, able to work from home as well. So I've just been doing that. And other than that, man, before lockdown, jiu-jitsu, physio on my neck. Physio is an essential service. So even though we're on lockdown now and can't really do jiu-jitsu, I'm still working from home. I'm still going to physio. I'm still doing, I just feel like it's life as usual, man. Few masks on and things like that. Homeless people yelling at me on the street. And other than that, not much else. How about yourself?
Yeah, it's been good. I think at the end of the day, we're all, you touched on it, they're all blessed. I think there's plenty of people worse off than us. So, although it's frustrating, can't travel and can't do much and got to wear masks, in the grand scheme of things, I think we're all pretty lucky, other than the fact we're all missing jiu-jitsu, which hurts and stings, because I think when it comes to 6 o'clock every night, not every night, but some nights, I'm usually on the mats, and it's a little bit sad. But you know, hopefully if everything goes well and we get through this, we're back on the mats as soon as possible. Back at higher jiu-jitsu on the blue mats.
That's it. And so what have you been doing in the downtime now that you're not able to train? Anything different?
Just work, been running, and then we usually, the good thing is we usually take the dog down to the dog beach down at Cronulla. So it's been most of that stuff's all normal. Because that's within our sort of local government area. So we can still go down there and walk and play on the beach and stuff. So still getting out there, riding bikes, enjoying myself. It's just, you miss out on the seeing your friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's it. But hey, it's all short term. Yeah. People hang in there. We'll all be back on our feet in no time, I'm sure.
Yep. But the good news is, segueing into UFC, we still have lots of sport to watch, which is great. So obviously the last card me and you spoke about was UFC 263, and for those that remember, that was the Israel Adesanya and Marvin Vettori card, and it's been a few weeks since that, and it was one of the most amazing cards I think we've had in a while. And I think let's start with, of course, the Edwards and Diaz fight. I think that fight everyone enjoyed, especially the last 30 seconds with Edwards. For those that missed it, Edwards was dominating the fight, majority of the fight, as most people that watcher would have seen. However, in typical zombie form, Nate Diaz, last 30 seconds, managed to rock Edwards, and had he not pointed at him for 5 seconds, probably could have finished the fight. So what were your thoughts on that one?
It's just, if he didn't point at him, maybe he could have. It's just this Nate Diaz thing to do, right? Like, even when he gave McGregor the 1-2 papa in the first fight, he was pointing at him in that one as well. So it's like nothing changes. That's for sure. What did I think? In general, I think like Leon Edwards is probably the more complete fighter. And I think that showed for 4.5 rounds, as expected, really. And as we talked about it, like, you know, why did Nate Diaz even want to take the fight? And I think I said I picked him for a upset submission victory. But I tell you what, like Diaz, even in a loss, man, he gains the fans, right? Like nothing changes. Everyone still loves him. When he fights again, he's going to be a massive star. People are going to be tuning in from everywhere. And like, there's not much else to say from my end on that.
Yeah. Now even Usman wants to fight him. He's somehow come out of this and people are looking at Edwards. Like after the fight, there was a real aura on Twitter and stuff. It was like Edwards had lost in spectacular fashion. And even Edwards, he was laughing about it. You know, he's like, just typical Diaz. And I think Edwards as well, to be honest, credit to him, he didn't stop fighting. He stayed in there and he was trying to actually, I think, put Diaz away. He kept throwing volume. He was getting more confident. And unfortunately, as MMA goes, it's not like any other sport like football where you can be up 50-0 or soccer up 5-0 and someone gets a goal at the end in MMA, 4 rounds gloves, you get rocked and you lose 30 seconds of a fight. And in the eyes of the public, you took the L. So,
hey man, if this was a straight fight,
and that's what he always says. Diaz, if it's a street fight, so maybe he should start his own promotion with no time limit.
It was funny mentioning street fights. So I think it was Faraz Zahabi was saying that 99% of street fights, in a street fight, he thinks that Nate Diaz beats 99% of the UFC fighters because they can't submit him, they can't knock him out, and he can outlast them. So yeah, interesting.
It's gonna be interesting to see if his chin ever does go, because it hasn't gone yet. And the amount of damage is taken. But that leads on obviously into the co-main, which again, I think we had another star born, and Brendan Moreno beating your guy, Davison Figueiredo. Moreno becoming the first ever Mexican born UFC champion. And I think it was crazy seeing the love that this guy's getting for a flyweight, considering where the flyweights were a few years ago, they were going to get rid of the division. So to see Moreno, because we thought Figueiredo was the next big thing. And then obviously we thought he was, many people predicted he was going to win this one. And for Moreno to come out and dominate and get that second round re-naked choke, which was just beautiful. I think he deserves to be champion. And I think they may do number three next. What do you think?
Number three between those two?
Potentially.
No, I don't think so. I reckon I reckon they give it a rest. You and I both picked Moreno in that fight, even though I'm a big Figgy fan. If you recall, we both chose Moreno. So happy with that one for sure. I can't remember how I said I thought he would win. I don't think I said submission.
I don't think I didn't pick submission either. I don't think
I can't. You know what? I might even have it written down here from the previous notes. Nah, I don't know, man. Distracted there. I was looking at my notes from the previous time we had a chat. We both chose Moreno to win that. So that is good. And I'm blown away by the support he got just in general. He's going to be a big superstar, man, because he's such a likable character and just all week, man, even on Embedded and stuff. Like, how can you not like the guy? But I think Figgy goes up a weight class to bantamweight. I think that's the straw that broke the camel's back. And I don't think that they do a rematch. If I look at the rankings now for the flyweight division, if you were to ask me, I would think that it's probably about time Askar Askarov got a shot at it, and they probably give him the crack at the championship.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, I think, you know, the only reason I thought maybe they'll do the third one is that Figueiredo might want to, you know, win it back before going up. But what you're saying makes complete sense to me. I think he's very big for the division. I think part of the reason Moreno got so over during the week is he was so humble, and Figueiredo was quite odd how aggressive and angry and upset he was. And he was saying he was going to pretty much destroy Moreno in that fight. It just didn't go that way. Moreno was just all-time performance. Dominated to me from start to finish, and then to obviously finish the way he did. I definitely jumped off the couch.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty insane moment. Hey, and how about the speech afterwards? And he's like, "Viva la Mexico!" And it was heartwarming. It was heartwarming.
Yeah, and then that obviously led into the main event of the night, and which I think was probably ended up being the least exciting, to be honest, of those three. Because to be honest, it went the way I think most people saw it was going to go. It was Adesanya pretty much in control of the whole fight, and Vettori really struggling to get any sort of offense off. And even though he thought he won at the end, he's definitely got some delusion, Vettori. But what did you think of that one? And more importantly, because it was so dominating, what do you think's next for Izzy?
It was very dominant, and it was clear. I thought Vettori was lucky to win one round. I don't see in any world where Vettori won that fight. So maybe it's just an ego thing. I'm sure that he'll come to terms with it over time. I'd imagine by the time his next fight rolls around, I have a feeling he would have accepted the defeat by that stage. If he hasn't by that stage, then I reckon we're looking at Vettori basically struggling to like get past these like, you know, losses and things like that, and holding on to it for too long. But I have a feeling he would have accepted it and moved on by the time he fights again. What's next for Adesanya? Whittaker. That's the talk, right? Rob Whittaker.
We're on the same page there.
Yeah. Well, I think that at this point, that's pretty much what the UFC is saying. Whittaker's saying, Adesanya's saying, it's the fight that pretty much everyone wants. And I'd imagine it's the fight that our listeners and the viewers of the UFC also want.
Yeah, I think it's time to do that one. I think it's time to do it in New Zealand. I think Izzy deserves that home fight now. The other thing I thought with that performance was it was just great to see him. He, you know, obviously Vettori was going to go for takedowns and implement the Jan Błachowicz strategy. And I think it's just confidence Izzy that didn't work. And back at his weight class, he was dominant. So great fight there. And I think a few notable mentions on that card. I think obviously the Paul Craig versus Jummer Hill. That was a sensational. Sorry, Jummer Hill. That was a great fight. Crazy armbar dislocation. Mm-hmm. What did you think when you were watching that one?
Oh, it was insane, man. Paul Craig's jiu-jitsu is incredible, which kind of goes to show, if you recall, changing the tune here. If you recall, Jimmy Crute's debut in the UFC was against Paul Craig, and he submitted him with a Kimura in like the third round with 10 seconds to go in the fight. So it shows you like Jimmy Crute's jiu-jitsu is a little bit underrated. Maybe it's his top control in his wrestling game as well. But so I'm looking forward to seeing him return, which obviously seeing Paul Craig do that kind of a submission victory over Jamal Hill here makes me sort of think about Jimmy Crute as well. What is it? He's a good man. And obviously off the back of that performance, they've scheduled him in for the return of Alexander Gustafsson, which I was going to bring up in the UFC news at the end of the podcast. But that's what's next for Paul Craig. I think he deserves a big name. I also think that Alexander Gustafsson, with the last few fights that he has, deserves an opportunity to, quote unquote, take a little bit of a step down. And I think Paul Craig is like a good measuring stick for that. That's pretty much my take on it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the mistakes sometimes these people like Gustafsson and stuff do, is they don't take that step back and fight someone a little bit further down. They keep fighting those high-level guys and racking up the losses, similar to what Woodley was doing. So I think that's a perfect fight. Someone that wants to take that next step, and then someone that wants to stay where they belong and not go further down. And as well with that, Hill obviously escaped with just dislocation, nothing too major, which is extremely lucky for him. And those two actually partying together that night, despite the intense build up. So all good to see. And then finally, I think that, we talked about actually being, you know, the main event of the prelims was the Drew Dober and Brad Riddell card, and we're saying how that fight is actually better than being the first or second fight on the main card. And boy, did they deliver.
Yeah, and I'm going to pat myself on the back here. If you recall, I said that it's my pick for fight of the night, and it was. So, Pat, Brad, good 60 work. 60
G's
on that
to
one.
You.
60 G's, yeah, for sure. It was a banger, man. It was a great fight. Glad to see Riddell win. And it was the conversation we had was that it was going to be a good back and forth striking battle. And Brad Riddell, just having the technical edge, was able to stay in there. And he's very resilient, man, because he also throws himself in the fire and he's willing to take damage to give damage, which is that's the sort of crux of the fighters who are exciting to watch.
Yeah, I felt with that fight, it went pretty much how I thought, to be honest. Like, Dober had that early moments, but Riddell, you know, he obviously trains with Izzy and stuff. He towards the end, just was able to find his shots and was definitely hitting the cleaner shots of the two and connecting better. And he seemed to actually be searching to find the right strikes, not just throwing.
Yeah.
Whereas Dober seemed to be really just trying to connect. And to me, it takes a lot of composure to obviously not get carried away and start throwing haymakers as well. So, you know, big props to Brad Riddell. It was a great night for City Kickboxing.
For sure. And on the Drew Dober point, remember he was coming off a loss of
Makhachev.
Yeah, Islam Makhachev. So to come back into the next fight against someone as good as Brad Riddell and, like, you know, be in there for the whole entire fight. And it was anyone's fight. It was up for grabs, right? Was good. It was great to see him come back and do well. And for anyone who's listening, as you mentioned, it was the main fight on the prelims, so you didn't need to have the pay-per-view to watch it. So if you have UFC Fight Pass and you didn't see that fight, I would highly recommend you go onto UFC Fight Pass and watch it. Brad Riddell versus Drew Dober.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think those two, you know, I don't think, again, Drew Dober lost, but it's just one of those ones where you don't lose that much in the eyes of matchmakers and Dana White, right? You need those guys. You look at the co-main that we'll get into today. They're not the most technical fighters, Gregor Hardy and Tuivasa, but they're entertaining to watch. So that's one part of, you know, being a really good fighter in the UFC. So excited to see those two get back in there next. And then I think it's important to touch on, obviously, the heavyweight division is like the biggest thing in all combat sports. If you're heavyweight champion, you know, you think of boxing, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, all the great heavyweight champions, you know, boxing's come back these days. And then the UFC, I think we now have that big star in Francis Ngannou. So obviously on the weekend we had Volkov and Gane and a pretty dominating performance by Cyril Gane. And now that's set up a UFC 265 interim title shot between Gane and Lewis. Now, this one to me doesn't make that much sense. The reason they've booked it is basically Ngannou said that he cannot fight till September, reason being he traveled over obviously to his native country Cameroon and he's just getting back into training. UFC said nope, we want a heavyweight title fight. Obviously heavyweight title fights bring in the money, so they've booked this in for an interim title fight and then the winner will fight Ngannou later on in the year. So what's your thoughts on this fight and do you think it should be for an interim title?
No, absolutely not. So if you have it on the top of your mind, when did Ngannou beat Stipe? Do you know what month that was?
I think the fight will be within 3 months of him beating Stipe.
Yeah, so for there to be a interim title at this point in time is absolutely a joke. Absolute joke. And I think there's a lot of play at factor here. Like they're trying to push, they want to push the Ngannou to continue fighting, as you mentioned. Obviously, the UFC is playing a bit of chicken with Ngannou's manager as well. I don't know if you saw that in the news. Then there's the John Jones aspect of it all, the money manager. You know, they're trying to get those two to fight. That's the fight to make, but they're trying to, you know, Dana wants it how Dana wants it. He wants them to fucking fight for peanuts, you know, for 30 rounds.
But there was actually interesting interesting Ariel Helwani pointed out something very interesting. And you'll hear a lot, if you listen to a lot of UFC, you'll hear a lot of fighters and John Jones a lot and think they'll mention this guy called Hunter Campbell. Mm. And he's the UFC lawyer, basically. And he's someone that deals with the fighters and contracts. And you'll hear his name pop up a lot. And they actually reckon he's the one that really does it makes these decisions, and obviously Dana is part of it as well. But he apparently he's pretty much operates behind the scenes, and he's very, very tough with and he's very tough with the fighters and with the managers. He knows how to play the game extremely well. He's a lawyer, so he knows what he's doing. So that's just a little tidbit there. I think they've hired someone that's incredibly smart to deal with contract negotiations and deal with these situations.
Yeah.
And that's how you end up with these, because that guy's probably not that in tune with what the fans think. He's just about bottom line, get the fights made.
Look at the chess. I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And look at the chessboard that would be the UFC. You know, you've got Francis Ngannou versus John Jones is absolutely the fight to make. And it's a massive money fight. They both want to be paid. John Jones wants massive money for that fight. And so the UFC, to try and make sense of another way to manipulate things, is to put on an interim title fight, give the winner of Gane and Derek Lewis is the interim champion. And then you have an opportunity where if they can't get John Jones to budge on the figures that they want him to budge on and make the Ngannou versus Jones fight, then you throw Derek Lewis or Gain in there to fight Ngannou instead. So it's just a move on the chessboard. That's all it is. And the fans are probably going to hate it when it comes to it. They're probably not going to be too shitty about it being an interim title fight now. Probably makes it a little bit more exciting for that fight. Everyone's a fan of Derek Lewis as well. But when it comes to them then using it later on to manipulate Jones and things, if they put that fight before the John Jones versus Ngannou fight, guarantee you the fans are going to be talking mad shit about the UFC when that happens.
Yeah, the problem I have with it, right, and then this is the reason we love the UFC, right? We get the big fights when we should get them. And if you look, as I touched on the boxing thing and the whole Fury and Wilder and Joshua thing and the 64 different heavyweight titles there are, this is the one thing that we love about the UFC. There's one champion. And if we want to make the heavyweight title mean something, like when Mike Tyson was champion in boxing, if we want to make the heavyweight title be the heavyweight title, the pinnacle of combat sports, then I just don't think setting up interim titles is the best way forward, right? Because at the end of that fight, he's going to get the same UFC title strapped around one of their waists. It's going to need a big belt for Lewis, but I don't know. I just feel like that's going to really water down the heavyweight championship of the world, in my opinion.
Oh, it absolutely. Like I said, man, I think it's a joke, and what you're saying is right. But as a viewer, when it comes down to the fight, Gain versus or Cyril Gane or Cyril Gane versus Derek Lewis, if it's for an interim title, look, on the day when the fight's happening, we're going to be excited and we're going to want to watch it. But removed from that moment, I think it's a bit of a joke. And what you're saying is absolutely correct.
Yeah, and just the reason I don't think it was necessary is I don't think anyone is going to view Gane or Lewis as the heavyweight champion. So people go, okay, well then, why do you care so much as an interim title? It's my point. Why do we need it? But we all know it's a game. It's pretty much a game. I know the game plan is one of them is going to be champion, and they're going to tell Ngannou, you're going to fight for this amount of money. And if you don't, we're going to take the title off you because you have to defend the title within X amount of days. Mm-hmm. They're not going to let Ngannou get away with, obviously, what McGregor gets away with.
Yeah.
So I can see why and the tactics behind it. Obviously, the guy's a smart lawyer, but at the same time, we need to defend the honour of the sport it doesn't end up being boxing.
Thinking about it a little bit deeper, I actually think that they will let him get away with it a bit. I think they're going to use it as a negotiation tactic, but I don't think they're going to strip him of his title. Because when we think about how big and the potential that Ngannou has to be a massive superstar because he's a heavyweight, the frame he has, the way he's just killing people. He could have the Nigerians on his back, all the African countries and things like that. He has such potential to be a massive superstar in the sport that I don't necessarily think they'll strip him of the title. But I think if anything, it's going to be, as we've sort of talked about, a negotiation tactic more than anything.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he's fought, you know, ever since those losses that he had, he fought back strong and he's taken a lot of fights. So I think the guy does deserve to, when you beat the best heavyweight champion we've ever had, and you do it in, you know, dominant fashion, you show lots of new skills, he deserves to have a bit of time.
Yeah, and remember, it was a rematch of one of the losses he did have, which was against Stipe, and he got absolutely dominated for five rounds.
Yeah.
So it just shows you the improvements that he has made.
Yeah, I just hope that, you know, once we get through this, we can get that John Jones fight made, because I think it's one of the most interesting fights in the UFC at the moment. Is, you know, we've seen John Jones do well, so I really want to see him go up and fight Ngannou, because it's just going to be interesting to see how he deals with that punching power. So hopefully we end up there after all this chess is done with.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm hoping as well. And I think it's safe to say that's what our listeners are hoping as well. If Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis do have a scrap, I don't know if it'll be on a pay-per-view or not, but if we to spend 2 minutes on it now, who would you pick in that, and who would you want to win it?
My prediction is Gane is going to dominate most of the fight and then get knocked out in two. remember what Derek Lewis did to Volkov a few years ago?
Yeah.
Completely getting dominated. It is the headline, by the way, of UFC 265, which is in Houston. So it will be the main event there. And underneath that card is a Nunes.
Oh, right. So it's Amanda Nunes. Scheduled.
It's already scheduled on that card. You had Nunes and Pena. Vicente Luque versus Chiesa, Aldo and Pedro Munhoz. That was booked this week, which is a great fight. Song Yadong and Casey Kenny. And then you got a few other good names on there, like Tisha Torres and Jessica Penne and Carolina Kowalkiewicz. So there's a lot of names on that card. It's a great card. It's in Houston, full crowd. So they'll be going to Houston a lot. They just signed an agreement with them because Houston's open. So I think Vegas, they still have the, you know, the UFC, the performance center that they're using. And then they have Florida and Houston at the moment are their main points that they're doing. So, yeah, it should be a great fight, but I think Lewis will win that one. The date for that one is August 7th, so it'll be August 8th here, I believe.
So that'll be our next chat then on the MMA ones.
Yeah.
All right, sweet. Well, we'll break it down in more detail when we get to it.
All right. So now, obviously, what we're all here for. So UFC 264, McGregor versus Poirier number 3, which I have to say has crept up rather fast after the first fight. I think after the first fight, we were talking about, you know, like, what's next? You know, what's McGregor going to do now? And it's almost like everyone just forgot that he lost. So, you know, and it'll be the first major fight card back at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. So you're going to have the typical McGregor weigh-ins, the typical press conferences, and I don't think it's going to be as friendly this time. McGregor's going back, so I think it's going to be a big build-up to the arena, so to the event. So before we get into the actual fights, and we'll get to McGregor Poirier last, obviously, as that's the main event, how excited are you for the overall card, and did it creep up on you?
Yeah, it crept up, absolutely, yeah. How excited am I? Look, I don't think it's the strongest card in the world, but if there's a McGregor card, I'm excited, man. They're absolutely excited for it, for sure. I'm also very excited for the Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Thompson fight and the Tai Tuivasa versus Greg Hardy fight. And, well, to be honest with you, it's Dustin Poirier and McGregor, that fight I'm most excited for. Then the next one is Sean O'Malley's return and Tai Tuivasa. They're the other people I really want to see.
I'm excited for it. I think it's great having O'Malley on there because, you know, obviously the people typical have success in UFC and combat sports in general have characters, right? Sean O'Malley's a character, so I think it's very smart to put him on a McGregor card. And I think it's smart to lead him off because everyone watches McGregor cards, and it is a weaker card because McGregor does take a lot of the percentage of the pay-per-view. He takes a lot of the percentage of the, you know, the pot that everyone gets. So they've got to keep the card quite skinny. I think the only time they've probably had a stacked card was UFC 205, and that was the first time in New York. But other than that, they're generally pretty skinny. So, but I think with the one that you're right that people are sleeping on is Gilbert Burns and Stephen Thompson, which we'll get into. But what a fight. Every time Stephen Thompson fights, I'm engaged. So it's going to be a great card. So let's get into it. And let's start with, obviously, Sean O'Malley. He's got a late replacement with Lewis Smolka pulling out this week. Chris Moutinho, who has stepped up. His record's 9-4-0 to take on Sean O'Malley. He's 13-1-0 with only his loss coming to Marlon Vera. So what are your thoughts on this one? How do you see it going? And how do you think O'Malley takes the change-up in opponent?
I think nothing changes. I had a little look at what's his name? Kyle Moutinho. Yeah, Chris Moutinho, sorry.
Moutinho.
Yeah, so yep. I've had a little look at him. I can't remember what his record was, but it's not amazing.
9-4-0.
9-4-0. So nine wins, 4 losses. Yeah, and he is shorter and has less reach than O'Malley, and O'Malley's going to be stronger than him. So I think O'Malley's made a smart decision here in picking this fight. I know he was looking for Ricky Simone, and that he was going to take a risky fight in that, which I think would put him in the top 15. If we have a quick detour here and have a look at the rankings. So bantamweight, Ricky Simone is, what is he? Oh, no. Okay. So no, he's not in the top 15. He's not in the top 15. My apologies. But in any case, they didn't go ahead with that fight because it turns out that Ricky Simone couldn't make 135 and could only make 145 yep. after calling him out originally. So that didn't happen. They ended up going with Chris Moutinho, and don't really know much about him, to be honest with you. He's smaller, he's shorter, he's got a shorter reach. He's probably not going to be as strong or as explosive as O'Malley. So I think they've taken a safe bet here and picked a fight that they know they're probably going to win, or at least have a very high percentage chance of winning. And I think he probably knocks him out or TKOs him, and that's a wrap.
Yep, I agree. I agree. I think that, you know, I think O'Malley's great striking, and he had a setback, which, you know, a lot of people have early on in their career. But I think they have gone with a safer option to, but at the same time, man, this guy's now coming, the most dangerous fighter, and you saw it. If you go back to Edwards Diaz, right? Diaz has nothing to lose in that fifth round. So he let it fly and he almost won. Moutinho has nothing to lose. He's literally going up against someone that should beat him, has been in a training camp, has hype around him, but he's got nothing to lose. So he's the, that's always dangerous too, I think. And it's similar to Diaz McGregor 1, right? Diaz, again, nothing to lose, everything to gain. It makes you dangerous. And I think that's something that O'Malley will be cautious of early on. But I think it's typically an aggressive, you know, he wants finishes. And so I think he will end up KOing him in the second round.
Yeah, well, you mentioned KO. He does, as much as he doesn't have anything to lose. And I think it's his debut in the UFC as well, right? This Chris Moutinho.
But no, I think he's had one, hasn't he? I think he's had one fight.
Oh, if you could double check that for me. It's in any case, he does have a bit to lose, his consciousness being a part of what he could lose here. I see O'Malley probably knocking him out, but I also can see Chris O'Malley having to shoot for his life, and O'Malley has an underrated front headlock system. So I have a feeling that if he shoots in on him and it's a lackluster shot, I can see O'Malley strangling him with front headlock as well.
Yeah. Sorry. It is his promotional debut. So yeah, again, nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Nothing at all to lose. And I think he will come out and he'll be going for it. I think he will not be holding anything back, because at the end of the day, the worst thing that can happen is he comes out and he goes for it and he loses. I don't think anyone's, you know, Dana will love that he's come out and he's given it his best shot. If he rocks him, wins a round, it's a win, right? So
yeah,
it's MMA, 4-ounce gloves, anything can happen, as we always say. So very, very excited for that one. And anytime O'Malley's in there, it's always, always interesting.
Yeah.
He's
an exciting fighter, man.
Moving on to the second fight on the card. I think this is one that a lot of people may not know of. We've got Irene Aldana versus Yana Kunitskaya. For those who know, Yana Kunitskaya is... that's right, Thiago Santos. That's his partner. So
really?
You'll see. Yes, so you'll see them in each other's corners quite a lot. They actually got engaged at the end of last year. So just an interesting factoid for people.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Irene Aldana is obviously coming off that decision loss to Holly Holm in October of last year, so a little bit of time off. And then, you know, Kutskaya has come off two wins after dropping a loss to Aspen Ladd in 2019. So her last victory was in 2021 against Caitlin Vieira. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Look, if I'm honest, I don't know that I've seen Jana Kunitskaya. I don't know if I've seen her fight very much. Aldana, I have seen fight, and I think, look, it's probably a decision win for one of them. If there's a KO, I probably think Irene Aldana will get that. Looking at the betting odds, it's very close. I think it's $1.80 for, well, just for the win. What was it? It was $1.80 for Aldana and $2 for Jana.
So, yeah, and I think
I'm unsure, man. I haven't looked too deep into this fight, if I'm honest with you. And while I'm being honest, I wouldn't say that I'm all that excited about this fight. It just happens to be one of those fights that's on the card, and it is what it is, whichever way it goes, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, everyone would have known a few years ago, Chris Cyborg came into the UFC finally, and that was a big thing for the UFC, and that's where the Women's Featherweight Championship was born out of. And she actually fought Chris Cyborg for that title. In 2018, she lost by TKO, which a lot of people do early on, but that's probably one of the biggest names that she's fought. And she came out of Invicta into the UFC. So, yeah, I'm the same. I think it'll probably be a decision. They both have decisions on their record. So I'll go with Kunitskaya in this one.
All right, we'll keep that in mind then. I'll stick with Aldana, and we'll see how we go. So it's a 50-50 flip of the coin here, Ray.
Yeah, and then I think one card, obviously Australia with Tai Tuivasa. We've got Tai Tuivasa coming up against Greg Hardy. Tai Tuivasa is obviously 12 wins, 3 losses, and Greg Hardy 7 wins, 3 losses. I think this one's not the hardest one to pick what's going to happen. They're probably both going to come out and swing and try and take each other's heads off. That's been their MO. So how do you see this one going, and are you excited for this one?
Mate, this aside from the main event, this is probably the main fight that I'm excited about. I'm a fan of Tuivasa. You know, he shows up to scrap. He never has a bad fight.
Loves a shoey.
I just appreciate just authentically himself, man. And that's what I like about him. And he's not a complicated person either. Like, what you see is what you get. Greg Hardy, on the other hand, I think you mentioned it in our last podcast. You're like, he's the one that everybody loves to hate. So I'm not really a fan of him. I think I've seen most of his fights. He also goes in there and scraps as well. So I think it's going to be a good fight. I don't see it going the distance. And I can see Greg Hardy trying to use his jab and length to keep Tuivasa on the outside, because he knows that Tuivasa is going to have a heavy right hand. So I have a feeling that Hardy's going to try and keep it on the outside with jabs and maybe shoot a takedown and try and get top control as well.
Yep.
And I think Tuivasa is just going to be doing what he does and trying to knock him out. And so my pick would be Tuivasa KO, or at least I'm very hopeful that that's what's happened. I want to see him steal the spotlight, man, on the McGregor card co-main event. Aside from the main event itself, I want to see him shine and really bring some eyes to himself, man, because he can be a crowd favorite, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think credit to Tai Tuivasa. You know, he won his first 9, and then he took a bit of a step up into, you know, Junior Dos Santos, and he took 3 losses on the trot, and now he's come back and beat Stefan Struve and Harry Hunsucker in his last two fights. So he's on a 2-fight win streak. Greg Hardy obviously lost at the end of last year to Marcin Tybura, which, as you said, fans love. And for those that don't know, Greg Hardy was a professional NFL player, and he got charged and sentenced to jail time for assaulting a previous girlfriend, and he ended up appealing it and getting off purely on the fact that the lady didn't show up to court. For whatever reason, and that's why he's not the most popular. A lot of people think he doesn't deserve to be in the UFC. So if you watch the fight on the weekend and you hear massive boos for Greg Hardy and you're unaware, that's why. It's not but it's also I think it's a tough matchup for him because Tai Tuivasa is such a fan favorite, mm-hmm. and then Greg Hardy is absolutely remotely not even close to a fan favorite. So it's going to be, and it's going to be a rowdy crowd, right? It's a McGregor fight. So if Greg Hardy wins this fight,
everyone in the room is going to be down for Tuivasa, man. Everyone.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's important to mention, because I think anyone that's listening to this that doesn't follow UFC closely is probably going to be a bit perplexed as to why. And I think everyone will understand now when they watch. So good luck to Greg Hardy in the
good luck. Have fun. May the best man win.
Yes. And of course I'm going for Tai Tuivasa, and he's gonna get it done early. I love that guy. He'll never number one, he's a heavyweight, and number two, he's entertaining. He'll never get cut. Yeah. He lost three in a row and didn't get cut. He won't get cut. He will be there for a long time. So, you know, because he's got that promotional package. And I actually think it's really smart they put him on this card.
Mm. If he does, I'll tell you what, if he does well on this card, he might even be able to be on the co-main event of the Adesanya Robert Whittaker card when that happens. That's probably what they'll do.
Yeah, definitely. Because there'll be a lot. I think it may be a little bit of a setback at the moment, but I think that the aim will be that card will be mostly Australians, mostly. Mm. Because obviously it's going to be very hard to get Americans here. Well, and I think...
Do you think they even do it in New Zealand? I know that's what Adesanya wants, but...
That's what Dana said.
Apex, right? Ooh, did he say...
Not Apex. No, Dana said that the goal is obviously to do it over here. He said this otherwise it would be in Las Vegas.
Okay.
It'll either be in Vegas or there. The reason it'll be in Vegas is obviously Vegas is where the UFC is home. It's the home of fighting. And I have from what I know is the T-Mobile in Las Vegas, they pay a lot of money to keep the UFC there. So you're probably going to see that happen now that Las Vegas has opened up. And now moving on to the co-main event, which I think is probably potentially could be one of the fights of the nights as well, because it's such a great fight, two high level welterweights. And Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Gilbert Burns. For those that remember, Gilbert Burns recently lost to Kamaru Usman in a fight that he actually rocked Usman for a little bit. Mm. And they were old training partners. So coming up against the karate style and fan favorite Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So what are your thoughts on this one, and how do you see the fight playing out?
Well, it's noteworthy that Gilbert Burns is ranked number two in the welterweight division, and Stephen Thompson ranked number four. So, and then obviously Leon Edwards at number three. So this is the fight to make right now, which I like to see the UFC making the fights that should be made, which is obviously as topical we were talking about earlier with the Ngannou and Jones fight and things like that. So it's good to see. What do I think? Gilbert Burns probably looking to box, getting close. Push him against the fence, try and get him to the floor and look to ground and pound him or strangle him or like submit him in whatever way he can. And Stephen Thompson, on the other hand, definitely has a reach advantage. And I think he probably tries to use that, stay on the outside, stay safe, and either pick him apart. And if he can hurt him, finish him from the outside, otherwise probably cruise to a decision. I think it's noteworthy, even though Gilbert Burns, we all know how good his jiu-jitsu is. Stephen Thompson has never been submitted, not in his professional UFC or not in his professional MMA career. Maybe he has in his amateur career, I don't know. But in his professional MMA career, he has been knocked out once, which was by Anthony Pettis, if you recall the Superman
off the cage.
And he lost three decisions. And other than that, man, he's won all of his fights.
His closest to losing submission was against Woodley, remember the guillotine? And that was UFC 205. That was a McGregor card as well. So we're in good stead here. He's the co-main again. So
I respect the hustle. You know your cards. It's good to see.
Yeah, well, I mean, that, to be fair, that was one of the biggest cards ever. So yeah, I think that's a, you know, it's a big fight. And I do agree with your analysis. I think one of the things that makes Wonderboy so dangerous is that his kicks and punches, he keeps you at distance. And it's very, if you watch the Woodley fights, and you know, sometimes they were a little bit boring because it's very hard to get in. If you go back, there's a few, I think, yeah, Dan Stigan in 2012, go look it up, Dan Stigan and Wonderboy, the kick comes over the shoulder and slaps him on the side of the head, doesn't even see it. And that's the danger.
Joe Rogan showed it on the JRE once.
Yeah, and that's the danger of Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is you don't see the strikes coming with that karate stance. And the other thing with the karate stance, he's very side on, makes it very difficult again to catch him. He's a smaller percentage of body that you can hit, and it's just very hard the way he brings that front leg up. He side kicks, you know, his front leg side kick is just from lifting it and kicking, it would be harder than most people's, you know, at full force. It's very dangerous to get inside and you know, he has taken some defeats, but I just think here he will play on the outside, kick well effectively, and get the job done. I do think Gilbert Burns will land one takedown though.
Yeah, so that's my prediction. Gilbert Burns, the difference between Woodley and Burns, I think you mentioned Woodley sort of finding it hard to get in on him. I think that Burns is willing to take more risk, and he's probably more of a forward-moving fighter and willing to shoot and engage and be in the range, where we've seen Woodley in the past would just back up and stand against the fence and basically be really, like, passive and then just try to throw one big right overhand or one big flurry and then go passive again. So there's a little bit of a difference in the approach there from the two fighters. But still, to your point, I think that Stephen Thompson can keep it on the outside. And my pick would be that Thompson probably wins the decision here, plays it safe, stays on the outside and gets the decision.
And I think, you know, for those that have listened to this podcast a few times, one of my pet peeves with these high-level fights at the top of the division is that they fight three rounds until the championship. And if you saw that Leon Edwards-Diaz fight, if they had made that three rounds, you would have just been talking about Edwards easily winning, right? Because I just don't think over three, Diaz would have been able to, you know, as you go to five and six, you know, if you went to six and seven, that's where Diaz would really come alive. So I think we saw the benefit of that. So I think this fight personally should be five rounds and it's three. This in a five-round fight, I think, again, is a completely different fight once fatigue sets in. And if Burns was able to get Wonderboy down, you know, it just adds different elements when you're on an extra 10 minutes. And I think if these two are in line for a title shot next, why not fight five rounds?
Speaking of five rounds, I agree, man. I reckon it could almost be a rule that I know that they have title fights and any main event on a any card is five rounds. Yeah. But I think it could almost be, you know, any fight where both fighters are in the top five should be a five-round fight.
Yeah, because, yeah, and I don't like the idea of a 2-1, like, in rounds. Like, I just think it's very it can almost play to, obviously, certain people's strengths, right? If you're a very – McGregor, right? McGregor's idea would be to do three-round fights, right? Anyone that's that style of explosive knockout power, you're always going to want to fight three-round fights because you know you don't need those extra 10 minutes. So I just think you can skew the results a little bit because you might have a fighter that's great cardio, really good over five rounds, but you match him up against two fighters that are really explosive and only need to have 15 minutes of energy. And then those people go fight Kamaru Usman, for example, and get dragged into the fourth round and the cardio is not there, right? And that's what I think anyway. I just think it's in a fight, it's such a big factor, and we saw it with the Diaz fight. So it's a shame it's not five rounds, but I think it'll still be a good fight.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. So what's your pick? It sounds like you're leaning towards Thompson.
Yeah, I think Thompson will win the decision. I don't think he'll knock him out. I think he will potentially rock him, but I think he'll just wobble him a bit. I don't think it'll be anything major. And I do also think that Burns will get him down. I think it'll be a 2-1. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Yeah. And of course, you know, as we know, Burns absolutely would be able to submit him on the floor. So, if Burns won by submission, if he's able to get it down to the ground like you're talking about and he can control it, like, I absolutely can see a path for victory with submission. The benefit that Thompson has is that Burns only has 5 minutes to do it. And if it happens like later in a round, you know, if it's, you know, a couple of minutes, he might only need to survive on the ground for 2 minutes.
as opposed to, look, if Burns can get it down to the ground in the first 30 seconds of a round, maybe, and it's in the middle of the octagon, you know, Thompson might be in a bit of trouble at that point.
Yeah, I think that the way he's going to have to do it is try and catch a kick or break the distance and get to the fence or something where he's not in danger. Because the reality of the striking that Wonderboy has, if you're close, his striking is generally less effective. He's less effective with his hands than he is with his legs. So I think what you're going to find is he's going to try and want to level change and get into the fence. And if he can break that, get that distance, you know, either be in or out. You can't, if you're in that middle karate range, he's going to get his head kicked off, right? So I think he's probably going to play with those ranges, keep it safe. And the advantage that I think Wonderboy has is with the Apex, as we know, that was a smaller cage. So all those fights you've seen in the UFC Apex, for those that don't know, that's the smaller UFC cage. Now that we're back in the bigger arenas, that's the big cage. So again, for someone like Wonderboy that wants to keep range and you know, wants to avoid things like double legs and single legs and getting up against the fence, that's obviously going to help his style.
Yeah, more room to play with, yeah. So he has the advantage, right, in the cage they're using. It probably favours Thompson.
He's that fence isn't as close and obviously the fence can help him too when it comes to takedowns. Use the fence the way you saw Meyer and Bilal a few weeks ago on the single leg. Bilal obviously using the cage very effectively to not get taken down, but I'd say his game plan will to not be hanging around on the fence, or he wants to keep the distance and just kick and jab,
yeah,
and pick his shots.
There we go. All right. So what are we up to now? Main card, the main event.
So obviously now we are leaning into the main event of the night, which I think the good thing is that most people would have seen the first fight, given that there was a lot of lockdowns and stuff, and most people would have been at home. And if you're not generally a UFC fan, I think most people would have watched it. But for those that don't know, it's Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier at 155 pounds. These two are, everyone knows who Conor McGregor is. If you don't know who Dustin Poirier is, he's an interim UFC lightweight champion at one point, lost to Khabib, which is normal thing to do. Most people do.
Standard outcome versus Khabib is that's what happens.
Yep, these two fought years ago at UFC 178 with McGregor winning that comfortably. In the first round, very early, beautiful shot, just top of the year, and finished off with hammer fists. McGregor returned, obviously, this, and Poirier from there really just became a different fighter, moved up to 155 pounds. McGregor obviously won both the 145 title, 155 title, and they've sort of, their careers have played out. McGregor obviously superstardom, and Poirier, to be honest, has just been a workhorse, just kicking through people, taking on everyone, and then the only really bad, any real loss that he's had is the only loss he has had is Khabib. So an amazing career. They came back together for a very different fight earlier in the year with Dustin Poirier winning that in the second round by a technical knockout. And here we are for the trilogy fight, middle of the year. So before we get into the fight and stuff, what do you think of the build up? Do you think the press conference, do you think it's going to be ugly? Do you think you're going to see the Conor of old?
First, I'll say when we get to the breakdown, you can have the honors and kick this one off. I've been doing it all night. You can have the honors for this one.
I'll kick it off.
But for the build up, look, I think it's going to be a little bit less chummy than it was. But look, McGregor, I think, has matured and you know, knows who he is, and I think he's still confident. He lost that fight, but I think he knows deep down he was very much in that and had moments of opportunities to win it himself. So I think he takes the loss on the chin. I don't think he comes out acting like the McGregor from 2016 when he's, you know, because he doesn't need to do that anymore, man. He's a massive superstar outside of the sport as well. So I feel like he's just going to be himself. Maybe there'll be a little bit of banter backwards and forwards, but overall I think it's still going to be above the line, and it won't be below the line. That's just how I'm feeling. What are you thinking? Because I know that it's a contentious thing, right? They are talking about how the approach is going to be.
Yeah, so I think it is it, and it won't be thanks to, I'd say, Poirier, but I think the media will play a role at the press conference in making it a little bit aggressive. Because if you look back at the card, this fight came about late last year with Connor saying, you know, I want to fight. UFC's not giving me a fight. Dustin said, I'll fight you. And he said, fine, we'll fight. I'll set up a cage and we'll fight for free. And we'll give all the money to charity. So then Connor said, okay, once the fight announced, he said, I'll still do the charity thing. I'll give $500,000 to Dustin's Good Fight charity. And then after the fight, we saw Dustin put up a tweet saying, basically saying, where's the money? Like, you know, you didn't do it. And Connor came out and said, look, it's a donation, not a debt. Send me some plans. Now, Connor's obviously donates a lot of money, so he wants to know that what he's donating goes somewhere. So he ended up donating that to a different charity in Lafayette, Louisiana, that Dustin is heavily with. But that sort of was a bit murky for a little bit there. They've been less friendly since. So I think look for the media to bring that up.
Yeah.
And look for there to be Connor, especially this Connor knows that there's not much there and he's a smart guy when it comes to trash talking. So he'll want to bring something up. And I think that's where it may get contentious. I think you might see McGregor be a little bit more aggressive. And the other thing with this build-up is Connor's left the whole family at home. No family. He's gone back to what he did with the Diaz fight. It's all training partners only, isolated. If you saw this last fight, he had his family with him the whole time in the hotel room, all that stuff. You're so off. That might... Yeah, yeah. So I think he's gone back to very much what he used to do, whether that makes a big difference, yet to see. But I'll kick this one off. Before you move on,
I reckon with that, you know, you're talking about the contentious point of the media yep. bringing up the donation, and you're absolutely right. That's what they're going to do. And I think they're going to phrase it by asking Dustin Poirier how he feels about it. And I have a feeling that before it really even sparks off, I think Dustin Poirier will shut the media down with that question. And I don't think it will become a huge talking point because Poirier will have the foresight to shut it down. In my opinion, that's what I see happening.
Yeah, I think the only way it would pick up is Connor sort of bringing up the... Well, I remember when I first saw the tweet, donation, not a debt, was pretty funny. It was a great comeback. Because to me, I DC, Daniel Cormier, when they were doing the Ariel Helwani podcast, he broke it down well at that point. You're saying that they're both right. Dustin has a legitimate reason, where's the money? And Connor has a legitimate reason. If I'm giving $500,000 to someone, I want to know where it's going. Because if you're going to put $500,000 into staff, or, you know, you might want to make sure it goes to the kids, or if they're saying they're going to build a gym, where's the plans for the gym?
It's stuff like that, right? Standard so, businessman, it's a corporate approach. You need to do your due diligence. If someone's making a massive donation in that sort of an amount of money, you need to know exactly where that money's going.
Yeah. And we've discussed this for 5 minutes now, and that's exactly why I think it's going to come up in the press conference, because it is the whole reason that fight came about. So when we saw that happen and they were so cordial with each other, I just think it may be the one thing that causes a bit of contention. The other thing is I think McGregor will be a lot more aggressive. I think he will not be so hug. I found it weird when they were hugging and holding the hot sauce and stuff. I think McGregor's whole thing about him is the aura that he has. So I think if he walks in there and he's just silent and confident and aggressive, I think, you know, we'll be in for a good fight. But in terms of the actual fight and how I see it going, I see two options. One is left field and one is probably more normal. Now, I think what we saw in the first fight, for those that what in the first fight, was obviously many years ago, both different weight. Probably both shouldn't have been cutting. So that fight, to me, can't really look at too much. But the second fight, what I saw is a very boxing stance McGregor, which we all know that said after they were literally going to announce Pacquiao McGregor after. He was a lot less free. And this is taking nothing away from Poirier. Perfect game plan, deserved to win. But I think everyone was a bit perplexed. But if you watch that early first round, McGregor, to me, won the round. And he actually was really good. I watched it the other day. And because he lost, I didn't really think about it, but I watched it again. I've watched it three times now. McGregor looked really good in that first round. The takedown, he got to the cage so fast, the wall climb, defended, switched it around, got in the shoulder strikes. Dustin was trying to do it. And Connor was really schooling him on how to do shoulder strikes. It was beautiful. And then...
Like that clavicle?
Yeah. It was beautiful. But Poirier stuck to the game plan, which was to chop the lead leg. And I'm not sure if it was much of a game plan. Like it was, but I think And Poirier alluded to that this week. The leg was there. He was standing in front of him trying to take his head off. And I felt that as he started to get the leg kicks and he obviously hit that nerve and the leg was caving, you could see Conor really trying to finish the fight. And there's a moment just before the finish, because let's be honest, the leg kicks finished the fight. Conor was, they were striking and there's one leg kick that lands and Conor's leg buckles and they switch. Conor ends up on the cage and Poirier immediately, they do a 180 and Conor ends up on the cage and Poirier just starts teeing off because Conor no longer has any lateral movement, any movement at all. He's just standing there like a sitting duck. Mm-hmm. And they're boxing. They're actually right in boxing range and they're not moving. And I think the one thing we said is before the fight, Conor is a better striker and I find Poirier to be a better in-close boxer. Mm. And what I said in that fight was Conor needs to use his kicks and his range. So once they got into that tight boxing and he couldn't move and his leg was gone, we saw the result. So in terms of this fight, I see it coming out early. I think you'll see Conor really moving back and forth, bouncy, checking leg kicks. And I don't think you'll see Poirier throwing them as hard as you were. You alluded to that again this week. That's not the complete game plan. I don't think this is going to turn into a – I think you'll throw one or two to test him, but I think this is going to – I feel this fight's going to go a lot longer. I think there's a potential for this fight to end up in the fourth, fifth round and even go the full distance, similar to Diaz-McGregor. And that's my wild pick because – and the only reason I'm saying that is I think – and my other pick is McGregor to just win early by knockout, but I just feel like McGregor had a lot of great early shots, and if he was a bit more calm – and wasn't so heavy on the front leg and wasn't trying to KO him and mixed in the kicks, he would have had a lot more success. Mm. So I do think, and he did stand up at the end of the first round. He wasn't as tired. He's put in a lot of effort cardio-wise. So I think there's a potential this fight could go a lot longer than people think.
Mm. Was he standing up because his leg was butchered or what?
No. So he actually said like after the first round, his leg was all right. You look in the second round, there's one or two kicks where I mean, he's just a sitting duck for it. And yeah. And it digged into that nerve. And for those that know, I can't remember the name of the nerve, but when it goes, there's no movement there. So it's you know. And the other question we may see is how hard does Dustin throw them after seeing Weidman? How hard does he commit to those leg kicks? So because if you get checked,
I wish you didn't bring that up, man. Jesus.
So, but to circle back, I know I mentioned a lot of points there, but I've watched a lot of them, and I think realistically it's the same situation. If he's light on his feet, in and out, using his striking, I can see Conor having a lot of success. For me, Poirier's advantage, again, will be that in-close boxing, using the leg kicks, a bit of wrestling, trying to tire McGregor out. But I think overall, McGregor will have a better approach to this one, and I can see him winning early or maybe a very tight decision, potentially.
Who would you pick in that decision?
In a decision, I think the decision would probably be similar to Diaz too, in the sense that he does enough work early on and survives a flurry.
Mm.
But I just, if you just watch that first round, man, he was hitting Poirier clean. It's just he was lunging forward. He wasn't bringing Poirier onto the punches. And Poirier was getting hit. So I don't think people realize like the success McGregor actually had. So, and there's always the risk though that, you know, Poirier's been fighting a lot more lately and McGregor's been out and we just see the same thing. So that's my full analysis, but what do you think?
Very similar, man. You know, like honestly, very, very similar. I don't really have much more to add if I'm completely honest. If they fought 10 times, I think they're pretty much at the same level. I think they edge each other in different areas of the arts overall, but I think they're very similar. And I think they both win a few fights if they verse each other. And I think that's just the tail of the tape between these two guys. My pick, if I was to answer that up front, is I'm going to say I don't think it will go the distance. I definitely can see what you're saying, though, but I think that they both have too much power. Like you saw the Nate Diaz fight where he's more volume and McGregor can hang in there and roll with it a bit more. But with Poirier, both guys throw heavy and have a lot of power, and I just see the fight ending, mm-hmm. maybe in the later rounds, but I see it ending. my pick would be McGregor in the first one or two rounds. I think he makes the adjustments, and you're right, the different points you've said, you know, his adjustment, the way he's probably looking at check and leg kicks, he's probably also looking at bouncing around more. He's probably also looking at integrating more of his skill sets, not just being so heavy on boxing. So I think the adjustments will be made, and he should get the dub. With respect to Poirier, I could see him making some adjustments now where he throws a few leg kicks to test McGregor, but then also goes up high, starts looking at getting McGregor looking at the leg kicks, but then throwing high at the head. And imagine if Dustin Poirier knocked him out with a head kick. That would be outrageous. I don't know if that will happen, but that's something that could happen, and that'd be amazing. Who do you want to see win? So we're both picking McGregor, but who do you want to see win?
Oh, I've made it no secret I'm a McGregor fan. But genuinely for this one, like for the last one, maybe I was a little bit blind, but for this one, I genuinely put it aside. I watched the fight and I just watched it again and again. And I just thought to myself, like, obviously I'm a McGregor fan, but I just watched it. I was like, wow, McGregor had a lot of success that I just forgot about. Like, it just forgot like the success that he actually had. And I did a bit deeper of a look. And one thing people can do is go back and watch the Eddie Alvarez 205 fight, which I think is the best fight of his career. And just look at the stance that he's in, and then look at the stance he's in this fight. And, you know, I know people say it's an excuse or whatever, but completely impartial. Just look at the different styles, the flowing in and out. And you'll see early on, Eddie Alvarez kicks, and I said this in the first fight and in our breakdown after, Eddie Alvarez kicks, throws leg kicks, and he lands once, but Conor immediately adjusts and he's in and out and he's checking. And he's in and out, right? So I think you'll see him play the range a bit more and be less square, less boxerish, because I don't think that's a good game plan against Poirier. But I want to say, obviously, it is a crazy prediction that goes the distance. I just think that I don't know if Poirier will be able to rock McGregor without the leg kicks. I don't think he'll be able to hit him hard enough without the leg kicks to rock him. And I think Poirier has great chin that we've seen in some of these fights he's had with Gaethje and all that. So there is a potential for it. If I had to put my whole bank account on it right now, whether it go the distance or a round one finish or a round two finish for either fighter, I would say a round one or two finish. But that, I just think that is a possibility that we could see given the skill sets. And I think you'll find they'll both be maybe a little bit more cautious in the first round, because they both know it's one apiece. The game plan that Poirier just implemented is out there now. Like, it's there. Like, we've seen it. So Conor knows about that. For the record, if you watch UFC, if you watch the UFC breakdown on YouTube that came out today, there's very little footage of Conor, but there's a footage at the end of Conor icing his shins in an ice bath at the end. Yeah. He goes out, sits on a chair, and he puts his legs into an ice bath. So I think that tells you all you need to know about. There's probably been a lot of leg checking going on. So they're making sure those shins heal up and don't have any swelling.
Maybe he's throwing them as well.
yeah, that's well, he would throw. He kicks. That's why I was confused the last fight. Kicks have always been – he virtually finished Cowboy with a head kick. The kicks against Diaz, he chopped his legs the same way Edwards did. Imagine if Conor had the leg kicks and the size that Edwards had. Edwards was knocking Diaz on his feet with a leg kick. So Conor has leg kicks, just obviously not the same size, but he used them against Diaz. He's used leg kicks throughout his career. So, and even in the first fight against Poirier, he was throwing wheel kicks and crazy kicks. So I think he'll use them a lot more, because I don't think Poirier has the same kicking game that Conor has. So I'd look for those front teeth kicks again. Deep stabbing into the midsection, the leg kicks, the head kicks.
I was going to say, I can see McGregor using that front kick to the body against Poirier, because Poirier's got a good cardio base, real solid midsection, and I can see McGregor investing in that as well, trying to draw it out a little bit to bring it more to an even playing ground.
Yeah, well, what made Conor so good, and again, that's why this fight was with him going so aggressively forward, is, and what made it really hard, to be honest, for him to compete against Khabib, is he usually invests in trickery, getting reads. He'll stick, you know, kick against the body, the legs, he'll throw head kicks, he'll throw variants of kicks to open up the head and to bring you into that shot, which he did against Alvarez, he did against Cowboy, and those sort of things, right? And that fight, I just didn't, when you watch it back, he had success, but it was all coming forward. There was some pulling him on, but it wasn't as much. And I think that's where his game plan, you know, he's got a wide skill set of kicks and strikes. So I think that's what he needs to do in order to actually get the job done this time, because Poirier's not going to fall over without a solid shot. And it's those strikes you don't see coming or those that we're looking for. So I think everyone that watches this fight is probably on the same page as us when it comes to what we see. But do you see takedowns by Poirier being a big factor here? And given how easily, to be fair, he got McGregor down, although he didn't complete it, that was very early. And I think he got him down.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the timing was good and he got him off guard. Is that right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, yeah, but it was that early still.
So, yeah, look, I think that was a smart game plan from Poirier to make him defend a takedown and have to work his way to his feet and use, you know, burn his arms out a little bit and things like that to try and, burn some energy, make him work early on in the fight to take the edge off his punches, and B, get him thinking about the fact that he can shoot. So I would look to see Poirier probably trying to do the same thing in the first round of this fight. But I also would think that McGregor would be prepared for that as well. You know, maybe even more so than he was last time.
Yeah, because if I'm honest, I see Poirier shooting early. Given what we've just discussed, I just think that I wasn't surprised when he shot the first fight. To me, it makes sense. He's a black belt. You know, McGregor, not even to submit McGregor, just hold him down. I think take that explosiveness out. Now, maybe he has the cardio to survive, but I just think that might be some, I think, or at least have the threat there of the takedown, just to put that in McGregor's mind. So I think that might be something we'll see. But so let's say Poirier wins, Brad. Let's say he wins, he gets the job done. Where does he go from here? What happens?
Well, he fights. He absolutely fights Charles Oliveira for the lightweight title.
And what happens with Connor if he loses?
If he loses, he probably has a Nate Diaz rematch for the trilogy. And that also isn't, depending on the loss, that's also not a terrible fight to make, given that even in Diaz's loss, as we just talked about before, it was in the fifth round, he looked like he was about to knock out Leon Edwards. So, like, that's going to make it puts some heat on that fight and makes it worth having.
Yeah, man.
What are your thoughts? This is if Poirier wins. What happens with both
of them? It's tough for McGregor, right? Because when he loses, it's like, for his reputation, like, it's hard because he's got such a big career, like, and he's, you know, he's got money and stuff. He doesn't need to fight. And that's what makes it hard, because what's his motivation, right? But if he loses, yeah, I can see him either doing Diaz or honestly just retiring and focusing on his businesses, because he has a lot of businesses. Like, when he lost to Poirier, the first thing he's doing is promoting his recovery spray on his leg that he just got kicked off. Like, say what you want, the guy rolls at the punches and is pretty smart. So he's got a lot of businesses and stuff like that. So he may disappear, but I 100% agree. Poirier fights Charlie Olives, as Dan Hooker calls him, for the title next. And yeah, maybe he does Diaz or retires. McGregor wins. Does he fight Oliveira straight away?
Absolutely. McGregor wins, he fights. The winner of this fight is fighting Oliveira. That's where my money is.
And I think the one that is the question then is obviously who Poirier fights, and I think you should fight Chandler if he loses.
That's a good fight. Yeah, and the promotion probably wants that because they like Chandler, and if he can beat Poirier, then he probably deserves another title shot.
Yeah, and they're two very, you know, like, they're two Americans. They're both charitable guys. They're both great guys. Obviously, you know, we know that, you know, Chandler, I think from that last fight, we saw what a good of a, you know, nice guy he is. He's got, obviously, his adopted son. And then you've got Poirier with his charities and stuff. So that makes sense as a good fight. next, and they're both high level. So that's what I see happening next. I think any other thoughts?
What do you think? So what did you think McGregor would do if he won?
Oliveira. Yeah. I think he goes for the title, I think.
Do you reckon there could be
I think what he can do with Oliveira is similar to Aldo. Like, I think he can go on the vintage attack mode style, right? Yes. Because he doesn't know Oliveira. He doesn't care. I think he'll just go on the bandwagon of, you know, your shit, you suck, you know, similar to what he did with Dos Anjos. Like, he had nothing against Dos Anjos, right? He had nothing really against Aldo, like nothing personal, not like Khabib. So I think he's just going to go on the shit-talking front if he wins. So, yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, do you think there's any chance McGregor wins? If McGregor beats Poirier, there's any chance they just do the trilogy then while it's hot, because McGregor's on a win. Nate Diaz is coming off a loss, but, you know, gained fans out of it. Or do you think McGregor just wants the title and then maybe defends it against Diaz?
I think that genuinely in McGregor's head, he wants to beat Poirier, beat Oliveira, and then he's going to 150% call out Khabib. I think he's going to push and push and push, because that's the path. Like, honestly, that's the path to getting him out. The only way Khabib would come back is for a big fight and for the money fight. Now, I don't think he would. I think he's done. He's very, you know, his reasons, for his mother and his father passed away. So it's all very respectable, and he's moved on to coaching. But I think that's what McGregor will push for. I think the Diaz thing is the Diaz thing. It's always there. Whereas I think the one thing he wants to do is be the one to take Khabib's O away. And that would be amazing. Like, if he ended up beating Poirier, beating Oliveira, somehow beating Khabib, and then beating Diaz and then retiring, I mean, that's a hell of a career path to finish, right? So that's what I'd be doing.
Do you say if he beats Poirier, Oliveira, Khabib, and then maybe Diaz?
Yeah.
And then that just rounds off everything, eh? But then they're calling for the trilogy, for the Khabib fight, you know, like it just never ends.
Just finish. Yeah. He took his one. Like, what's the point? Like, whatever, like, to me, you just take the one. You know, don't even do the Diaz fight. Just if you beat Khabib, you beat Khabib. That's it. But that's what I think he'll do. I don't think he'll let that one go.
I can see what you're saying, and I agree with the call out for sure that he'll be looking for Khabib, but I don't think that fight happens. I don't think Khabib comes back. I think we're probably looking at, this is if McGregor beats Poirier, I think we're looking at, he defeats Poirier, he defeats Oliveira, and then he potentially has a massive fight with Nate Diaz, and then at that point
the title
maybe relinquishes the belt and retires, or I don't know, man. Maybe what if Islam Makhachev can get up into the lightweight title picture, would he potentially verse Makhachev, knowing that if he can knock him out, maybe then he can entice Khabib back?
Yeah, they're all paths, and but I do think that genuinely he's gonna try and do that. I just think it's the one thing that he really wanted to do. And I think he probably, you know, at that time, we all know at that time he was a bit of a crazy man. No, you know, just after that, all the stories came out and the news articles and the arrests and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's one he wants back, and it'll be interesting. But again, to me, it's just interesting to see how this one goes, because we don't really know what McGregor, like, it still baffles me. He was talking about it again today, like, this training camp's all been MMA. It just baffles me why he was doing so much boxing. Like, yes, he was going to fight Pacquiao, but, and that's gone now, by the way, because Conor McGregor's management managed Pacquiao, and Pacquiao just signed a fight using a different management, even though he's contracted to Paradigm Sports. So Paradigm Sports and Conor's management is actually suing Manny Pacquiao right now.
Really?
So that fight, unless they're going to do it because they hate each other, but that fight's pretty much gone now. That's the reason that was happening. They were under the same management, so it was very easy to do the deal. And that was virtually a lock. They were going to do that. So that's gone. So, which I'm happy about, actually. I don't want to see him box. I want to see him fight MMA.
Yeah, no, I want to see him fight MMA too. I don't give a fuck about McGregor boxing, man. Like, don't get me wrong. If he fought Pacquiao, it'd be a massive fight and I'd watch it. But I don't give a fuck about that. Like, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there we go. That's UFC 264 in the books, eh? Now all we need is fight week and embedded and then watch the fight. Are we going to still be in lockdown during this?
So, lockdown is supposed to end on the 9th of July, which is Friday. So I think what they'll do is open up slowly. So we may be able to have people over. But I'll definitely be watching it here. So maybe if it's open, you can come and watch it with me.
Maybe make my way out to Cronulla. All the way out to the Shire. That's my first time going there.
Yeah, mate. You'll be right. Yeah, we'll see. But I think that's hopefully on Sunday the 11th. It is. That'll be good. So make sure you tune in. I think the prelims will start at 12 p.m. and the main card starts at 2 p.m. Usually the main fight, depending on time, will be around 4, I'd say. So make sure you tune in. If you're in Australia, I think it's KO, main event, UFC, Fight Pass. They're your options to watch it. I don't think there'll be any pubs this time to watch it. So unless you're doing what you shouldn't be doing
Streaming.
Illegal streaming, yeah. So I think, did you see that some UFC fighters and like celebrities, they take photos that they're watching the fights and people point out they're illegal streams? I've seen a few of that, like people are like, that's not a you didn't pay for that.
My problem is like, don't funny. Get me wrong, I allegedly may or may not have watched some streams, but when it comes to like a pay-per-view event, that's the thing, a big card like this, the last thing I want is it to be 1.5 rounds into the main event and then the stream cuts out and then you just like fucking then it kicks, then you get back onto another one and like someone's been knocked out and you missed it. So I'd rather just pay the money and watch it from the comfort of my TV or with friends or whatever.
Or well, it's always tough
the
with pub,
if the pub's open, you know, a couple of beers, always enjoy doing that.
Yeah, I made the mistake the last McGregor fight because I just, for context, I just moved into my new place. I was like, the first UFC, I'm going to watch here, not at the pub or whatever, with mates will be the McGregor card. And it ended up being a rough experience, but because obviously being a McGregor fan. But yeah, I think it's definitely one if you're in lockdown and, you know, you've got nothing to do, rather than spend the money going out to dinner or whatever, just splash it on the UFC. And make Connor even richer than he is.
Yeah.
Get some proper 12.
What else we got now? Are we on to some UFC news or what?
Yeah, so you've said you've got some news to share, so take it away.
Yes. I know, Ratwani, I do not mean to steal your, you're the news anchor here on the team, but you hosting, I thought I should do my due diligence and have a little bit of research of what's going on in the MMA world right now. And I think one of the big talking points is the Joe Schilling knocking out a civilian inside of a restaurant. Did you get a glimpse of that video?
I did. I saw that he's been charged.
Really?
Yeah. So he was saying that it's like the guy was yelling racial slurs or something. But from what I know, he was charged. Because at the end of the day, no matter what, he's going to lose that in court because the guy could have been yelling whatever he wants. He just walked over and just knocked him out.
Yeah, well, they brushed shoulders or whatever, and the guy sort of turned around, and I don't know what was said, but, like, you know, the guy was half his size. He was blind drunk, looked pretty much defenseless, and Joe Schilling just went, ba ba ba, and just knocked him unconscious. Like, no self-control, man, and it's been a topic of some of these recent podcasts is self-control, and there was absolutely none there whatsoever. And if you're a world-class MMA fighter, you absolutely need a little bit more self-control than that when you're in the streets or in restaurants and bars and things like that. You can't be knocking people out like that.
And just on a point of that, and again, we don't know the full story. Maybe there was more to it. This video is short, but Bisping, man, like Bisping said, he got hit by someone in the street recently when he was on vacation. Someone just walked up and punched him, and he just laughed and kept walking because he knows what he can do. He doesn't need to. He's a UFC middleweight champion. He doesn't need to prove it. So he just kept walking. So it's funny. In the same week, we've got two stories of one just walking away and one because I suppose you do get a bit of that being a UFC fighter. There is – and or being an MMA fighter if they know who you are. But sometimes, you know, people come up and they think, oh, let's test out if he is actually. So, yeah, I don't know.
It's yeah, well, I mean, look at, I mean, that's the difference, right? Joe Schilling, is it, yeah, there we go. You know, Joe Schilling was fighting for Bellator, right? And just yep. looking at his Wikipedia right now, his professional MMA record, he's had 10 fights, 4 wins and 6 losses, and he's been knocked out twice and submitted 3 times. So, and he hasn't won a fight in MMA since March of 2019. So, you know, you're looking at someone who Bisping, you know, knows who he is, has had all the success in the world, won a world title. He's had wins and losses and things like that. But, you know, he's probably got a career that he sleeps well at night with. And Joe Schilling, on the other hand, is probably dealing with his own inner demons and you know, doesn't have the same self-control.
So for that, like the police report basically says that he was guy's last name, funnily enough, this is going to be really funny. The guy's name is Justin Balboa. Good old Rocky Balboa. He's basically really drunk and saying things to his wife and stuff like that, which caused it to escalate. And then basically Schilling walked up and punched him. So he is facing potentially a battery charge. They're obviously investigating and see what comes of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. That's one of the news. Another thing I've got is, as we know, Dominic Reyes has got beaten by John Jones, and then he was knocked out by Jan Blachowicz. And what was the other fight he had? Is that it? Dominic Reyes.
Pretty close with John Jones, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, there you go.
He almost hit.
I'm trying to find it, man. Anyway, Dominic Reyes. So he has been sidelined due to having surgery on his meniscus, and he's not expected to return for he's out for 2 months, and their expectation is he'll return before the end of the year. There's also been a few cuts this week. So they've had 5 UFC fighters cut from the promotion, Emil Meek and Joe Ellenberger being 2 notable names of that. And the other 3 are just, I think, people who haven't had that much success. I don't really know who they are. Another point, which we didn't talk about in the McGregor and Dustin Poirier card, is that there's been some chat around McGregor having a staph infection, or at least, you know, viewers seeing something on one of his arms in a photo and thinking that that's what it is. McGregor denies it. And you mentioned something about a medical professional saying that that's not what it was.
I think there was like a few doctors and like people saying they were doctors and stuff on Twitter, like commenting, saying that it's potentially not, like it might not be. So I'm not sure. If it is, he's denied it, said that it's not. So the only other thing I could think of, because it was in his elbow, right? Yep. He has been, if anyone's seen, he's been riding his bike, no shirt, to the gym every day. He's not getting in his Rolls Royce as much. He's been riding his bike down to the gym. So he could have potentially fell off, which is not good. But there's that as well. And then there's just the other thing, if it's fighting, right? So
yeah, it happens. Hits his elbow, knocks his elbow. Yeah, heaps of different things. Another one, you know, where does Kevin Lee fit into all of this? Kevin Lee has been booked against Sean Brady at welterweight on the August 28th. So that is his first fight going up a weight class from lightweight to welterweight. So it's been a while since he's had a fight. Now he'll be returning in a couple of months now. So looking forward to seeing how he goes. If he doesn't have success at welterweight, I think he at that point probably just fades into oblivion and doesn't get too much more success in the UFC. But if he goes on a bit of a run, I mean, the world will open up for him.
Yep.
Other than that, man, the last thing I've got was that Alexander Gustafsson's coming back, but we touched on that. He's versing Paul Craig. I touched on that when we talked about Jamal Hill and that fight recently. But the only other thing is Tyron Woodley is training with Floyd Mayweather for the Jake Paul fight that is coming up in August. So I don't know how much training he's doing there, but there's been some talk around that. Floyd Mayweather invited him into the gym to train, and Tyron Woodley had a little conversation about that on one of the YouTube videos I was watching, and he was talking about how there's a lot that he can learn and plans to continue training with him.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. one of the greatest of all time and someone that was good at not getting hit very often comes and offers to train you. I think it only makes sense. Did you also see that I saw the other day, and now it's been overturned, the Rob Font situation?
No, what's
the story there? So after his fight against Garbrandt, he popped with USADA.
What did he pop for?
A cosmetic product or something, but it's been overturned, deemed that it was a false positive. But to me, so basically you tested positive for traces of 4-chlorophenoxyacid metabolic, was some sort of thing on the perimeter list. They've got a long name. But it's a commonly, so basically it was like cosmetic product or something, maybe a cream or something. So it was nothing to do with that, but apparently they've got to have to look into it because it shouldn't be causing false positives. It's never good for people's reputations because that stuff sticks with people. Because he was suspended, technically. So that sucks for him, but glad it got fixed up because he definitely doesn't seem like a guy that would be using steroids. And after the biggest fight of his career, beating Garbrandt, that sucked. So that was a standout for me.
Yeah. Did you have anything else? Those were the points I had. You've got more.
The only thing that I wanted to discuss, and I just think it's an interesting topic, and I think I've brought it up before, but we keep seeing obviously the eye pokes. So the gloves, if anyone doesn't know, the UFC gloves, they go up to roughly, just past your knuckles. So the end of your fingers are loose. And one issue that we see often, and Bilal Muhammad's probably the biggest example, is, these eye pokes, because people use their hand out for range, or when someone comes in for a takedown or a strike, people got their hands up and they're pushing off with their fingers, and we're getting these eye pokes. So I just think it's crazy. And John Kavanagh posted as well, like, that if you look at the old Pride gloves he mentioned, like, they covered up most of the finger. But we're just relying on fighters, like the commissions and stuff are asking the fighters to keep their hands closed. But to me, it's just like, that's not going to – what about grappling? Like, when you're reaching, like, there's – I've been poked in the eye before in grappling, non-expected. So I think everyone it can happen easily. So – to me, hopefully they end up changing those gloves, because I just think it's a topic that's not discussed much. It's discussed in the moment and then forgotten about. But if imagine McGregor Poirier was stopped, because McGregor got poked in the eye, or Poirier got poked in the eye, and people have spent $60 and some people hard-earned money that are struggling to watch a fight, and, McGregor and Poirier have trained their, trained as hard as they can just for that to happen. So, yeah, what do you think? Do you think they should update the gloves, or the onus should be on the fighters?
I definitely think that there's something that should be – well, the onus – I mean, they need to be looking – yeah, it's hard, though, because fights are – the guys that are standing there with their fingers out, measuring distance their fingers out, if there's eye pokes due to that, take a point. Like, let's not fuck around, take a point. But in the heat of the moment, when there's hands flying and all that sort of stuff and accidents happen, it's hard to say that things are deliberate. So, yeah, I think the USC, in time, we're going to find them, like anything, what'll be 25, 26, 27 years into the UFC, we're still a baby sport. I think that the tools of the trade are going to improve over time, and that the natural thing is the gloves will improve over the next, I don't know how long it is going to be, but changes need to be made. And it's a good topic to bring up because, of course, as you mentioned, we had the Bilal Muhammad versus Leon Edwards fight, which got stopped. But then last weekend, there was also another stoppage due to it, which was, what's his name? His name is slipping my mind. He's a great fighter, though.
This is on the Volkov card, right?
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, the Fili and Pineda fight. Fili was doing really good.
That's right.
And he ended up eye poking him, and that's actually why I wanted to talk about it. It completely slipped my mind. I was watching that and I was listening to the commentators call me and stuff saying, the ref should give it another 5 minutes, like all the way the 5 minutes, shouldn't call it. The guy couldn't open his eye. Like, I've been poked hard in the eye before and it hurts. Like, I think most people have been poked in the eye, and like, it's a very if you get poked in the eye bad enough, and you know, it's going to get to the, like, do they have to get to the point where someone loses an eye? Like, at the moment, the worst that's happening is where, you know, getting no contests. Like, that's the worst we're getting at the moment. They're recovering. But that, the, when I saw, I thought that Bilal Muhammad rolling on the floor screaming because he thought he'd lost his eye would be enough to get the things changed, but the gloves changed. But yeah, to me, it's an interesting topic because I just see it happening more and more, and especially as fighters are grappling and keeping their hands out for range, surely we can get a glove that can do it. I think what's Rose Number Yunus and Gaethje's coach, that he's got
Barry.
Is
it Barry? No.
He's got gloves that
what's his bloody name, man? How am I even forgetting this? But the Andre Philly fight, you know, you mentioned his eyes were closed, and he was, yeah, that's Trevor Whitman, that's right.
He's got gloves that he's pitching, but they just, nothing's happening with them.
Well, because the UFC is probably not going to want to buy them. They're probably going to want to design their own thing in-house and not have to pay millions to acquire something.
Yeah.
That's probably what it is, man. But, you know, the Andre Philly fight, Pineda, I think DC and that are right, man. At the end of the day, maybe he couldn't go on. You know, his eye was closed. You were right. But the rules stay, if there's an eye poke, you have up to 5 minutes to recover. And so with the groin shots, the eye pokes, you know, before you call a fight off, use the fucking 5 minutes up and then make a judgment. Don't use a minute and then call the fight. Use the 5 minutes and then make a judgment. Because that's
fair enough, but
you know, granted, the fight probably was still going to be stopped, but follow the rule book. Use the fucking 5 minutes up. That's my opinion.
Fair. My only point is, like, after 5 minutes, yeah, like, maybe his eye opens, but we don't know the damage. Mm. Maybe he can open his eye, but detached retina, whatever. We don't know the damage, right? So I think the doctor was just – the doctor, if you watch it, the doctor gave him chances. The doctor didn't call it the first time. He gave him chances, like, open your eye. And then he put three fingers in front and he said one.
I'm not saying it was the wrong decision. It was absolutely the correct decision to stop the fight. But I think that that you need to follow the procedure. Use the 5 minutes up before you make the decision.
Yeah, well, maybe
the decision that was made was correct. It was a correct decision. I'm not arguing that. Absolutely, it was correct.
Yeah, and the other thing with it, I just think it's tough because people are like, okay, we go 5 minutes and then Pineda fights. But, you know, Pineda's now, you know, potentially at 70%. Like, if you can't see a kick coming over your shoulder, you can't see – you're seeing three feelies, and it was already a tough fight for him. It's not going to be
– oh, man. I didn't think it was
going to
I didn't think it was going to get out of that round. Andre, I'll tell you what, yeah. Andre Philly looked real good.
Yeah. Overall, it was I think Philly was going to win. But at the end of the day, that stuff happened. And I think it's an interesting topic in MMA. And it's one of the things that, you know, needs to be, hopefully someone steps up and changes. I know why they're not doing it I know why it's hard, because it's going to be a tough thing to change, because you're going to have some fighters that don't like it.
Mm.
But and then they're going to blame it and stuff. So maybe it's a case of get the gloves out there, get them all training with it. And then, you know, because no one likes change, but we'll see. I'd hate to see a major fight cancelled because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what will force the change, right? If we have a fight like this one on the weekend and McGregor or Poirier gets poked in the first round and the fight gets stopped because of it, then I guarantee the conversation around this adjusts a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So in summation, I guess, unless you have anything else, I think that's pretty much the UFC 264 preview. Again, it's on the main card starts at 12 p.m. The prelim started at 12 p.m. The main card will start at 2 p.m. and with McGregor around 4 p.m. So make sure you tune in and watch and catch up with us for the next podcast to hear what we think about the fight. I think we'll do one probably not too long after to talk about it.
Yeah, we can, just do a special one, chat about it.
Yeah, I think we can, even if it's a half an hour, just chat around the card, or an hour,
yeah,
chat about the fight. And then, the next one will be 265. So awesome.
That sounds good. That's
what's that, episode number 49 in the books. And if you've listened this far, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, we have a new logo specifically for the MMA focused episodes that will drop with this podcast tomorrow. So please, guys, let us know what you think. We're excited about it. And we're going to keep tuning out these podcasts, at least with the pay-per-view events. And as usual, the Artist Surrender episodes that I host will continue as per normal. I've got one with John Smolios and Matt Vogermason from Higher Jiu-Jitsu coming out in the next week. And then Jake O'Driscoll from Essence Jiu-Jitsu coming out the week after that. So a couple of things in the books. One in Sydney, then heading back over to Perth for a chat. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, and I think one other thing I'd say, like, obviously, this was born out of us enjoying just talking about MMA. So once you post it, if people want, post your predictions and thoughts on the main fights in the comments, because I'd like to see what other people think. Obviously, I have my friends and stuff, but there'll be people that comment that I don't potentially know. So it'd be cool to see what other people's thoughts are on the main fight and what they think will be happening. Mm. That way, when we do the next one, we'll have a general consensus of what people thought, and we can compare that to how it went.
What we can do moving forwards, now that you mentioned that's a great idea, like, drop the put some shit in the comments, please. But what we can do is leading up to one of these podcasts, like a day or two before, I can put a couple of stories up for, like, you know, get people to do a poll on, like, X versus, yep, X. And then on the podcast, we can talk about what percentage of people picked each person, and we'll do that around our picks as well.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea, because, yeah, I think getting people that are like-minded to us involved and seeing what other people think will only make it all the better.
Yeah, that's it. All right, man, let's call it a. Thanks for that. I appreciate your hosting. Good job, mate. If I say so myself, you did very well.
Oh, thank you.
You're a natural at it, and looking forward to the next one. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you.